Welcome to episode 3! Episode 3!
Can you believe we're at episode 3?
I know. Only took us 6 months to get episode 1 out. But welcome to episode 3 of Shut Up and Ride. Thank you to all the people who've listened so far. We put it out and last night, and it's already had loads of listeners and loads of people on social media chatting to us. And people seem to be enjoying it so far, but we will see. How are you? Ben is, we can't get hold of Ben, so we're just recording without him. Ben is very hard to get hold of, isn't he?
Just a bit, but he's very, very busy at the moment. He's doing so much performing. I think he's a pretty busy chap at the minute, so I think we can let him off.
Yeah, we're just doing nothing. Just nothing.
Yeah, exactly. Just dossing.
Right.
Anyway, how are you, Jenny? How are you? What have you been up to?
I'm all right. I have been doing a new role over in... So obviously, for anyone listening who is new to the pod or new to... Obviously, I know... I appreciate a lot of people are on here to follow Ben because they're hoping at some point I'll post an Instagram picture of him with his top off. It will happen, people. Don't worry. It is coming. I'll wait until when we reach 1,000 followers on Instagram or 1,000 listens on the podcast, I'll put a picture of Ben with his top off. He hasn't agreed to this, but he should answer his phone then. Love you, Ben. So, yes. So I live in Canada. Simi lives in kind of Loughborough way, aren't you? Leicester.
Yeah, I actually live in Rutland, but but the horses are in Leicestershire.
And then Ben lives up the north in Yorkshire, up the north. I don't think that's how you say it. So I live in Canada, and since moving here, obviously, I have been working a lot in the US, but I now have a role commentating on all the big classes at Thunderbird Show Park in Langley, which is a massive international showground, which hopefully, Simon, you will come and ride at one day. It is glorious. A lot of the Irish go there. Conor Swale absolutely loves it. Tiffany Foster's there. Ashley Bond was there the other day, like all these top show jumpers. Daniel Coyle, Matt Sampson was out the other day. Anyone who knows Matt Sampson, we should get him on the pod, actually. He is great.
Yeah.
We get a lot of the big names. It's more of the national classes this weekend, so I'm having to learn a lot about riders that I don't know. Ben's just sent us a message. Sorry at a show, truly shocking signal, but I'm free Monday. Yay, we'll get him back on the pod. I'm commentating on all the classes, and what is lucky for me, my style of commentary is a bit more kind of horse focused. I like to do a lot of research on the horses and learn their stable names. I'm less kind of they won a 4-star or came fifth in a 3-star. I'm more like their stable name is Teddy.
And haven't they got a nice tail?
Yeah, they're so pretty. But also, I'm never going to say Twiggy is his dog, by the way.
She's looking out the window.
Oh, gorgeous girl. Nice to have her on the pod. She is the ruler. So, yes, my commentary is very much more like that. I go down dark holes of Instagram to find out about the riders that I don't know so well, which is lovely because some of them, it is all about the love of the horse, especially at the national level. But, yes, so there's a lot of, I really like this horse. He picks his knees up. And I get very excited and there's lots of whooping. I commentated on a derby class the other day. So they were going up and down.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God, you've gone American.
I know, derby. What's happened?
Yeah, just getting in the spirit of it all.
Yes, and that was very fun. Although I kept saying no one's going to win this class unless they learn to canter off the bank wasn't very steep. So I was a bit critical because a lot of people were very fragile about coming off this not so steep bank. And my commentary box was right next to the bank and the window was open. And some of the riders were having such a great time. And I was like, look, you can see Sarah like galloping up and she's having a great time. And then she would like hear me and like start grinning. So, and it is, there's an amazing bar at Thunderbird, and they have rail shots. So they've basically got a jump pole that they've put holes in and put shots in. And so everyone holds a bit of this pole, like ski shots, and they drink shots. And if you win a class, you get your name on the bar. And it's just glorious. The VIP is amazing, but there's massive stands and they fire T-shirts into the audience at the between the classes and what they call a drag, which we would call like just, well, I suppose do we call it a drag in England? I've been here too long. Basically, when they bring the tractors in between the first round.
Oh, okay, yeah.
They fire T-shirts into the audience. Yeah, and it's just for me, because I'm much more kind of that style of commentary, which is much more like, woo, like a bit like you when you're show jumping. And I've had some amazing feedback because they play, now this is the caveat, they play the commentary for the live stream out over the what they call the bleachers, the seating. So the people
watching. So everyone can hear you live as well.
Yeah, they play it outwards so the riders can't hear it. Because when they first tried it, the riders could hear it. And it was very obvious when someone had 30 faults that I was like, got to stop talking. So yeah.
I mean, so that's quite pressurised then for you, isn't it?
It is. But again, with the classes that are like metre 40, obviously metre 60, I'm never going to be able to say. I can say whether it was good, bad or ugly, but I'm never going to say how McLean Ward's jumping in that kind of style. Do you know what I mean? Whereas I can say, look how they've lost the power through that turn. Anyone watching, look how the riders turn their body. So it's kind of educating, and I count the strides out loud and things like that. So it's Chris Pack, who's brilliant, who's director of president of T-Bird, was very keen. He says that 40% of the people who come through the doors at Thunderbird don't ride. So it's about educating. So very long-winded way of telling you that I'm commentating this weekend. And if anyone's still listening, we are going to talk about Simon in a minute. I'm so sorry. There's now a dog in shot.
But I think, commentating is, it's really fun, isn't it? Mm. But this is serious stuff, isn't it? For you.
It is. I have to be a grown-up and I can't swear.
Yeah. No. Oh, God. Yeah, no swearing.
No swearing.
You're not that good at it.
I am when I have a microphone in front of me. I'm not, especially.
You're super professional.
I am.
What is that?
I feel like this pod is a circle of trust. I'm a terrible mother. The other day, James was being so annoying, my son, like so annoying, and I just turned around and went, "Can you just stop being such a dickhead?"
My God.
And then I was like, because I was playing tennis with him, and it made me realise he's not my mate; he's my son, and I can't call him a dickhead. So yeah, what do I do with that?
But it's called adulting.
Yes, which I'm terrible at.
Yeah, I'm not very good at it either, to be fair.
I don't enjoy being an adult.
No. Life was so much easier before.
It was. Oh, Simi. So I put an Instagram post up about a picture of you looking rather handsome on a mountain. And we have chatted on the phone because we chat most days, but I've been like, I can't hear about Mont Blanc and Hickstead and all the other crazy shit you've done in June because I want to save it for the pod. So I'm listening to it with fresh ears. Seriously, overachiever much? Take us through, what do you want to start with? The fact that you do the most dangerous sport in the world for a living and you decided to throw yourself up a mountain, or the fact that you just had the best Hickstead and were absolutely incredible, only clearance speed derby. I mean, where do you want to start? There's so much to unpack.
Well, I've been very, very lucky. I've had an amazing time. June has been quite a special time. The Planet all started a couple of years ago when I decided that I wanted to try and climb Mont Blanc. Still, I keep on questioning myself as to why I decided to do it actually now. I wanted to challenge and I wanted to do something cool and do something a little bit different. And, you know, I've put so much into my riding career and the yard and the horses and all that kind of stuff. And I kind of wanted to make sure I did other things as well. So, and I just thought that would be a really cool thing to do, but I never really thought I'd be able to do it or have the opportunity to do it. So, but I actually thought I'm just going to go for it and I'm going to do it. And especially recent events, you kind of think, yeah, get on with life and get stuff done, and you know, and
listening to this, the dog keeps coming in for attention. She's attention seeking hound.
I know she is. She got a little bit. I kind of think, you know, I've got to do some really cool things, and Mont Blanc was that. So I looked at the calendar for this year. And I thought, right, I say Bram's that week, and then a little bit. I mean, there's Cat and Horse Trials that weekend, but I think I could probably do it that week. So I kind of put that in. So I kind of booked in to do Mont Blanc. So there's only like a small window opportunity to do it. And then, of course, almost as soon as I'd booked it, I realised that the Speed Derby was 2 days later. And so I thought, no, it's fine. It'll be fine. And I didn't even really think about it. But I was like, it'll be fine. You literally just fly back in. Okay, so I'll book my flights now. So it's all organised. I'll fly into Gatwick. And then I can meet the horse there. And it will be fine. And actually, as it turns out, it all works out really, really well. And that is exactly what happened. In fact, it just wasn't one horse. I took a few horses as well. And I was really lucky that my staff, my people that helped me, got the horses down there. And it worked really well. So
that is, can I just say, anyone listening, who doesn't know Simon. That was a real insight into what Simon's like. He is the most, like, you are just so wonderful. And you hate calling, you pay these people, they are your staff. But yet you find that so awkward, don't you? Like, you, everyone is your friend. You don't think you're better than anyone. Like, you are just, like, you are the person who will talk and include anyone in a situation. And anyone listening to this, the awkward face you just make when you had to use the word staff was just, you're so cute. I do love you. You're just such a sweetie. Aww, he is that nice, people. It's not fake.
Well, they're not staff. They're kind of like family, really, and they do an awful lot for me. And
they do, because you go and throw yourself up mountains. You did.
Very, very lucky. And obviously, you know, going. So to climb Mont Blanc, you have to acclimatise for the altitude. The altitude is a really big deal. So Mont Blanc is 4,800 meters high. And obviously when you're above, well, obviously, but when you're above kind of 2000 meters, you're going to start to feel issues with altitude, and altitude sickness is a really, really big deal. And it's really debilitating, and it could stop you from basically just even walking. So actually I went to London a few months ago to get tested to see how good I would be at altitude. You put masks on, you do exercise and all that kind of stuff. And it turns out I'm not very good with altitude. So actually, I got a machine for the month before I went. And it's basically a mask that you put on, you kind of wear it for like an hour and a half each day if you can, which was fairly hard to fit in. And that made a massive difference. I didn't have any issues with altitude at all. So that was. I mean, it was relatively expensive. A family friend actually financed it for me, which is really kind. So a massive thank you to them. And it made such a huge difference because I didn't have any issues with it at all on top of the either mountain. You have to go to acclimatise. That's where I was going with that. Sorry, I'm going off on random tangents. To acclimatise, you climb Gran Paradiso, which is the highest mountain in Italy. So, and you stay on there at 3,000 metres for a couple of nights so that your body gets used to being up there. And Gran Paradiso in itself is quite a challenge. Our guide, so there were four of us that were doing it, and our guide, we were all kind of at the kind of higher point when it starts getting a bit more dangerous and steeper, and we're all tied to each other. And he was quite funny because when we got back from the main summiting day, we got back and he was like, yeah, there are a lot of crevasses on Gran Paradiso, and if one of you guys falls down it, then there's no problem because I can sort that out. But if I fall down it, then there's a bit of a problem. I was like, why are you telling us that now? Because we've been and done it. And he's like, yeah, I was just hoping it wasn't going to happen. But apparently there aren't as many crevasses on Mont Blanc, so I wasn't quite sick. So yeah, wasn't good. But anyway, so you do that, you stay on that mountain, so you can climb size, and then you go for the big one, Mont Blanc, and you climb up to about 2,500 meters, and you stay in a hut there called Teruse, and then you go up the most dangerous part of the climb, which is the Grand Couloir, which is basically vertical, lots of rocks, and it was very icy and snowy first. NFC, it's normally at this time of year, it's actually fairly dry, and that makes it the most dangerous part because it's so unstable, and people get hit by rocks and that kind of stuff. So theoretically it was safer, but I really struggled with that bit because it, like I say, it was vertical, and the drop and the fall would be, well, fairly huge. And obviously it, like, we are roped up, like we're roped up to each other, but there are two of us and one guide, and I was just slightly freaked out about the fact that, you know, if I was to fall, basically someone's got to be strong enough to be able to hold me. And if we both fell, then they've got to be strong enough to hold two of us. And I just can't really see how that works, but it does work. And
it feels like a bit like if one of us is going, you're all fucking going. Like that feels like that to
That's
me.
Definitely what it feels like. And obviously they know what they're doing, these guys. And, whew, scary. And then when we got to the top of the Grand Couloir, I was like, I really hope I'm not going back down that way, because that was really scary. And I didn't want to turn around and look because it was such a big drop. And I said to Jorge, who was my guide, who was amazing.
He's always going to be called Jorge.
Jorge. And I said, please tell me we're not going down that way, back down that way. And he's like, that's the only way back down. I was like, Okay. And so then you carry on and you try and summit that day, and then you come back down, and then you stay at another hut, which is at the top of the Barrancoola, called the Guta Hut. And it's amazing. Like, it kind of houses 70 to 80 people all in bunks, and then they do really good food, and the views are insane. It's like a spaceship that's kind of built into the side of the mountain, into the cliff face, and it's incredible. I'll send you some photos. And that was incredible. But I had a bit of a sleepless night that night, because I was thinking, we're going to have to go down the Grand Couloir, and I don't want to do it. Well, not I don't want to do it, I am really nervous about this. And on the way down, I got to probably about 20 feet down. I was so impressed I actually went over the precipice of it. Is that the right word?
Yeah, precipice sounds posh. Go say anything with confidence, like me commentating. You just say it with confidence, people believe you.
Okay, that's cool. So when I went over the edge of that, I was like, oh, I'm doing okay. But then I got about 20 feet down, and you're having to face down the mountain. And honestly, like, so 100 people a year die climbing Mont Blanc. That's like a, that's a thing. It's a proper thing. And I can totally see why, because, you know, it's hardcore. It's proper hardcore. And I just got to about 20 feet down. I was like, I can't do this. And I kind of froze, and I was basically clinging onto this rock, clearly freaking out, but very quietly. And Jorge was absolutely amazing. He just grabbed me by the hand, and he was like, Simon, you need to breathe and you need to relax. And I've got you. I'm not going to let you fall. And I was like, oh, I say this to people all the time. You need to breathe and relax, and it's not that easy. But literally. And then Fabio, who was the other guy that we had, he was brilliant crack. He had the other two lads attached to him, and he literally came swanning past as I was having this moment. He's like, Simon, you just need to let go and relax. And I was like, okay. So I kind of did, and actually I was fine after that. And it's such an achievement getting to the bottom of that and getting to the top of it, and god, incredible. I'm really waffling.
No, you're not. I'm enjoying it. And one of the things, when you told me you were climbing Mont Blanc, I was like, oh, okay, Mont Blanc, I've heard of that, no, it's a mountain. Then I googled it, and I was like, has he fallen off a horse and banged his head? That's a serious mountain.
It's proper. Yeah. And a few of my friends said, yeah, well, I've climbed Kilimanjaro. Kilimanjaro is literally a walk.
That's a hike, isn't it? So,
yeah. Don't get me wrong. It's obviously a massive achievement to do, and good on, but this is just another level.
It's mountaineering, yeah.
It's proper mountaineering, yeah, which I've never done before. So wearing crampons and a spiky on your feet, and being roped up, scrambling. I've never done any of that, and you were learning all of it on the job, which was quite something. And I think that's another reason why I had my bit of a meltdown, because I was like, I've literally never done anything in crampons in my entire life, and now I'm trying to scale down a freaking cliff face with a, like, however many 100-meter drop if I trip. Yeah, I think that's why I freaked out a bit. But it was, honestly, it's just the most amazing experience to go up there and experience. Like, we weren't that lucky with the weather with Grand Paradiso. We basically had a blizzard hit us. And when we went to Mont Blanc, the wind was horrendous. Like, you could barely stand up. It was that strong. And actually, we had to take shelter in a shelter that's really close to the summit. And you could hear the wind, like, battering this building that we were in. It just makes you realise how insignificant we are and how amazing nature is. You know, it was incredible, a real eye-opening experience, and, well, trip of a lifetime, to be honest.
Has it inspired you to want to do more? Like, is this like a thing? Because I really want to go on an adventure with you.
Yeah, no, definitely. I want to do more. I'd like to do more climbing. The next one that I'd really like to do is Mount Elbrus, which is the highest mountain in Europe, but unfortunately it's in Russia, so and I'm not sure that's the most sensible thing to be doing right now.
Not sure we're a fan of them at the moment. Might change.
But I'd love to do that. I'm looking into lots of different things.
Canada.
I really. You're sorry.
Canada, it's lovely. Come and hike with me.
Yes, Canada's amazing. But I really, really enjoyed having this aim and this focus. And, you know, the training for Mont Blanc was fairly intense, and I did a lot of it, and I loved it. I really loved it. And I also, you know, with the Mont Blanc thing, I was like, I'm just going to have to take this as a, you know, see how it goes kind of thing. And actually, I can do it all with the horses as well. And, yeah. Which was which was the kind of the biggest thing for me.
When you are in those situations, so for me, it's very odd. When I run, I put headphones in and just want to get it over and done with. But when I go for bikes now in Canada, and I think I mentioned this to you of how to look at it, like I'll go for hours and hours and hours, no headphones, no nothing, just like enjoying the world as it is. And I can literally go up things that I just never thought that I, whereas you ask me to work out at the gym, I'm 10 minutes. I'm like, oh, that's awful. But yeah, I'll hike up things. My legs are burning and I don't care.
Yeah.
What was like when you're hiking up there? Like, do you think about the horses? Do you think about like what is it that's going through your mind apart from shit that's a long way down?
Goodness, like so many different things. It's such a like eye opening kind of experience to you and your life. And like I thought about pretty much everything that's in my life. And the thing that kind of got me the most with it was how low it is, you know, like it's really slow. Like the you walk up there so slow. Well, I say walk, like you're it's very rhythmical, but it's very slow. But literally, you do not stop, and it is like, but and I could keep going like that all day. Like Fabio, especially was, well, and Jorge as well. They were like both amazing, and they just kept going for hours. And it does, it gives you loads of time to think about all kinds of things. Yeah. Definitely. And no music, none of that kind of stuff. Because you want to take it all in. Climbing a mountain isn't all about making the summit. Climbing a mountain is all, it's, I hate to sound all kind of dramatic, but climbing mountains just is very much like life. Like, you know, you need to take everything in as you're going through, and you need to realise how great it is where you are at the time. Like, there are a few times when I kind of look up the mountain and be thinking, oh, Lord, we've got so much further to go. And I tried to train myself to be like, but isn't that pretty? Yeah. Isn't this a great view? Isn't, or like, God, we haven't come such a long way already. You know, try and take some positive from where you're at. And what was amazing was I feel like we're going so slowly, but before you know it, you're where you're supposed to be. Which slow is never a bad thing. And the other thing kind of that I tried to do a lot of was when it was hard and when it was difficult, I would think to myself how bloody lucky I am to be able to do this, like to be able to do it at all in the first place, to be physically able to do this at all. Which is another reason why I want to do stuff like this. It won't be that long before I'm at the age where, you know, I've been mashed a lot of times by horses, so I'm going to be stiff and sore and not be able to do stuff at some point in the future. And so I want to make use of it now. You know, so you just think, you're so, like, I'm in pain right now. I'm really sore. You think, well, you're bloody lucky to be in pain and be sore. You can feel it.
You're feeling
life, and I really like that. I think that's really cool.
It's a good way of looking at life.
Yeah, I think so.
It's nice to do things as well, isn't it, without the phone out. I always think, like, I go on these hikes and stuff and I'm like, oh, I want to take a photo, and then I'm like, no, just do it with your eyes. Like,
yeah,
it's just the way we've done the world. It's everything through a lens, and it's just like sometimes I just go, do you know what? I don't need to look at that through a lens. I'm just going to look at it, take it in.
Well, and that's true. And of course, I have my camera, and I did take photos. I didn't take anything like as many photos as I maybe would have liked to, but it's never quite as good.
No.
Like, you know, you take photos and you look at them after, but at the time when you're there, it's insane. It's insane. Like some of the views and what we experienced up there, I'll never be able to share with anybody else in any kind, any photos, because it's just not. And there's just something that is so much better with actually being there. It's a bit like cross country courses where they look so easy on telly.
They do.
What's
that about? It's so frustrating as well, because you're like trying to show pictures of things to people. Look, I jumped this, and you're like, looks really like.
Yeah. It's like you can't. It's that classic. You had to be there.
So now you've climbed a mountain. At what point did it dawn on you then had to fly and go and jump at Hickstead? Like, did you kind of have that in the back of the mind the whole time, or did it suddenly smash you in the grid suddenly?
No. So I did Bramham. I did the 145 Grand Prix at Bramham the week before, a couple of days before I flew out to France. And I focused on that very much. And then when that was done, then I focused on the climb, focused on Gran Paradiso, then I focused on Mont Blanc. And then as I was coming down Mont Blanc, I actually started thinking more about the fact that I was going to Hickstead the next day, purely because it was so painful. Like, coming down, I trained for going up.
Yeah.
coming down. It is.
It's a bugger on your knees.
Oh my God. It was knees and your quads, isn't it, down the front?
Yeah.
And they were shot. Absolutely shot. And I really struggled with that. And when we got down to bottom, I was and blisters as well. And that's when I was thinking, I'm going to have to jump tomorrow. And I can barely move right now. This is not good. And then I stayed the night there. And I left at 3:30 in the morning, French time. So 2:30 in the morning, our time. And I drove to, I had a hire car, so I drove to the airport. And then I flew at 7 a.m. And then I landed at 7:30 in the UK. And then I drove from Gatwick to Hickstead. And I parked up. I said to them, can I go and park with my lorry? They're like, no, you need to go and park in the owners and riders bit. And I was like, oh, where's that? And they're like, near the exit. And I thought, I know Hickstead. And I was like, my God, that means I've got to walk down the hill. And I think you've just come down Mont Blanc. You don't want to go down the hill. Amanda had literally arrived just as I arrived as well. I mean, the timing was perfect. And I walked across the field to walk towards her, and I could barely walk. It was so sore. I was so sore. And she did say I looked really pretty crippled, but it was amazing. It only took a couple of days, and then I was fine. But trotting up on Wednesday afternoon, I could barely move.
Did you have to run with your horse?
Yeah,
with Splash. Splash, wasn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. But and there was a very nice lady who was kind of the lead of the trot up, and she said, oh yeah, if you could. And I was like, sorry, I'm very, very stiff and sore. She said, aren't we all? And then I trotted down and trotted back, and she said, why are you so sore? And I was like, I actually climbed Mont Blanc yesterday. And she's like, you did what? I was like, I climbed Mont Blanc yesterday, or just I came back down from climbing Mont Blanc yesterday. And she's like, I'm very impressed. I was like, oh, thanks very much.
That must have, like, almost wanted to induce you into tears, knowing you had to run with your horse.
it was proper sore. But like I say, it got better. Like, and actually riding was fine.
Different
and
muscles.
I jumped. I had three horses at Hickstead, and I jumped a class that afternoon as well. I did the Fox Hunter on another horse, and I was fine riding. Thankfully.
You are nuts.
I say fine. It was sore but fine.
You are absolutely nuts. And then Speed Derby, fast forward a couple of days later. You qualified for the Speed Derby.
I only just qualified, which was slightly concerning. Because I did feel a bit out of kilter, and I'm going to blame it on the fact that I had done that climb. And then we did qualify, thankfully. And it is the most awesome class. I love that arena. It's incredible to be able to compete in there. It's just such an honour, you know. And going in there and with all these top jumpers it's an iconic course. It's always the same. Been the same for years and years. And yeah, I had a brilliant time. Absolutely brilliant time. And I was second in, and Sebastian was absolutely awesome. He jumped his socks off, and I was very slow though, Jenny.
You were slow, Simi. You had just climbed a mountain, and Splashy is slow Splashy. He doesn't want to go that fast either side.
No, he likes to pick them up. And he jumped this beautiful clear mount, and you know, and he won quite a lot of money. He was eighth and won quite a lot of money.
He was the only clear though. Can we just like the only clear? The only clear.
With all these top show jumpers, and then there's little old me and little old Splashy. I was so, so proud of him. So proud of him. You know, I've just been really proud in general of the last month. I know that makes me sound like a bit of a ponce, but I actually am. So
that's all right. Are a bit of a ponce. It's fine. And Speed Derby, I always think, I don't mind that bank that you come down at the beginning, but the bit for me that I don't like the look of, especially if I was sat on an eventer, is the kind of on-off bank towards the end. Because I think some ballsy eventers must just eye that up, especially if they've done a 5-star and go, okay, do you want me to jump the whole thing?
Yeah.
I've seen a couple try and do that.
Splash has done that bank a couple of times now, and he's pretty good with it. So, and he basically, he took it upon himself to do it however he thought were best. And he did do it very, very well. He's so cool. He's so cool. He's amazing. Such an amazing little horse.
He is a very amazing little horse. And just for people who maybe don't follow you and are here because of Ben Atkinson taking his top off. He doesn't event anymore, does he? He used to
event. No, no. So Splash did Badminton and Burley a couple of times each. And he enjoys this show jumping so much more. And cross country, he basically told me that he wasn't that keen anymore. And I kind of obviously continued to try, but it became clear that he really wasn't as keen on it anymore, you know, because he was phenomenal and he definitely wasn't the same horse anymore. So we kind of thought, oh, we'll back off and we'll take him jumping. And he just loved it, flourished. And it's made me, I mean, I've always enjoyed show jumping anyway, but it's made me enjoy it even more. It's been lovely to do some bigger tracks and bigger classes. And yeah, you know, and he's a very special chap, very talented chap.
What needs bigger pants? Climbing Mont Blanc or going around a 5-star?
They're so different. I was genuinely scared on Mont Blanc on numerous occasions. And the biggest thing with Mont Blanc is that you can't stop. Like, when you're doing a 5-star...
You're tied to bloody Jorge.
Yeah, exactly.
Jorge, don't stop. You don't stop. You're tied to him.
Absolute ledge. But, like, and if you get halfway down that cliff face, like, well, quarter of the way down like I did, and you go, I can't do this. I don't want to do this. Well, there are two options. You either continue down or you go back up to the top. There is no stopping and there's no giving up. And that makes it pretty scary. Whereas, like, when you're doing any cross-country course, like, there's always that option to say, so you know what, actually, it's not working out for me today. I'm going to save everything for another day, and then and off you go. And there's always that option, whereas finally, there just isn't that. And what is more scary? I don't know.
Victor versus being tied to Jorge. I don't know why I have to say that. I apologise to any Jorge's in the world at my terrible attempt to pronounce your name.
I think Mont Blanc was scarier, actually.
Ooh, interesting.
But from a perilous point of view, Badminton, Burley, all those, there is a strong likelihood of you being judged or making errors or looking stupid or that kind of stuff, which I find makes me quite nervous. And obviously you don't get that when you're climbing a mountain, because you're kind of in there and no one else really cares what you're doing, as long as you don't fall on top of them or dislodge a rock
that's going to fall on them.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, there you go. I've given you food for thought.
Food for thought.
I think in my life, I'm more likely to climb Mont Blanc than I am to do a 5-star.
I think you'd really enjoy Mont Blanc.
I think I would. I do like a climb.
Yeah, I think you'd really enjoy it.
Seems a bit drastic.
But you do have to be pretty good with heights. Amanda was quite funny because I've had lots of conversations with lots of people when she's been there, because we did quite a lot of conversations since.
And Amanda works for you.
Yes, she does. She helps me. And I've said it numerous times now. I was like, yeah, I thought I was okay with heights, but actually it turns out I'm not that brilliant with heights. And she said, I could have told you that you weren't any good with heights beforehand because you got nervous about climbing on top of the lorry, let alone climbing up a mountain. And I was like, okay, that's a very good point. Thank you for pointing that out.
Amanda will always say it like it is.
She definitely does like saying it. I mean.
I'm loving your update, but people don't want to listen to us forever. But how else is in Simi land? Any entertaining moments in your life at the moment?
No, not really. I mean, like I say, June was pretty amazing. I did so many things. I climbed Grand Paradiso, I climbed Mont Blanc, I did the Hitchin Speed Derby, did the Hitchin Speed Derby. I won a couple of events. That was really good. I'm always like winning an event. So it was fun. And I went gliding.
Wowzers, trousers.
Have you been gliding before?
When I was small, a long time ago. I don't think I'd want to do it again.
I loved it. It was really cool. I was on one of those ones. I didn't get towed by a plane. You just get flung up there by a long kind of ropey, wiry thing.
Good description.
Flung up there and then you fly for like 5-10 minutes. And I was given control of the flight as well, which is really cool.
Wow.
Yeah. So yeah, I mean, nothing funny, I'm afraid, but lots of really cool things.
I went to the Rockies. I went over to the Rockies. We did a big road trip They're like mountains on crack. They're like enormous, unbelievable. It's just the most beautiful place on earth. We're very lucky. I did drag the kids up, made them get up at 2:30 in the morning to then get on a minibus to see the sunrise over Moraine Lake.
Amazing.
A few other people doing it. Funny that, not many kids. Put head torches on the kids, made them hike up a mountain to see a sunrise. Yeah. I think they enjoyed it. I enjoyed it.
It's definitely a climbing, hiking thing, isn't it? Start in the dark.
Yes.
And to be able to see a really nice sunrise.
Yes.
Because we had quite a lot of that.
Well, then I decided to walk around the lake because it was empty while my husband took the kids back to the bus. And he took the bear spray with him. And on said I then ran into the biggest bear shit I've ever seen.
Oh, no.
And they've got lots of grizzlies there. And I was like, oh, do I keep going? I'm walking around this really beautiful lake. This is really serene because Moraine Lake gets full of tourists. So it's so lucky to see it with no one there, the sun rising, it completely empty. And then I heard some what I thought was whistles. And I was like, is that whistles? Is that whistles? Or is that a bird? I'm feeling a bit deranged. 5 o'clock in the morning, I haven't had any sleep. Got back to the minibus, we went. An hour later, they shut the lake because people had gone and skiing off the top of some mountains. And I did hear whistles and it was them seeking help. And there's me thinking it's a bird call.
Oh, no way, really?
Yeah. Oops.
Are you feeling like a bad person now?
Well, no, I think they obviously had alerted someone and they closed the whole thing down to helicopters.
Sorry,
cheers. Yeah, no one died through my lack of distinguishing between... Oh, there's another dog! Oh, hi.
It's Teal.
Teal
says, hi. Teal's very needy. Hi.
Yes, you will.
This is a... What is that? That looks like a border terrier type thing?
Yeah, she's a border terrier. She's border terrier.
I don't know that one. I only know Gorgeous Girl. I'm guessing that's James's dog.
Yeah, she is. She's cute.
But yes, so what's
the highest peak in the Rockies then?
If I say it with confidence, would you believe me?
Okay, we'll have to look that up for next time.
Okay, they're just really bloody big. Really big. Yeah. And we did like Banff and all
really,
that.
Really, really big.
Really big. There's one called like Ruddle.
Oh, well, there you go. Okay, so when I come over, we should climb that.
Climb Ruddle.
Yeah, very good.
Thanks. I'm here all week. Right. So it's been lovely catching up about your Mont Blanc shenanigans. With Paris round the corner, I think we're going to try and get maybe someone who's been selected or someone to do with the Olympics for the next pod, which will be exciting. I can't believe that's come round so quickly.
I know, it's amazing, isn't it? I'm so excited to see how it all pans out. And there've been, you know, we can talk about it next time, can't we? But like some of the selections have been very surprising, and some people have been left out that you wouldn't have thought maybe would be left out.
I want to know who you think was going to be in that wasn't in.
Well, I mean, God, our team has been the GB team. I mean, that was such a selection, wasn't there? Like incredible talent. Like, you know, like Kitty King, for example, like she's been left off. But like, what else could she have done? She's been phenomenal all year. And Caroline Powell not being on the New Zealand team. Again, that's so surprising. Having won badminton, you would have thought she was absolutely guaranteed to get on the team. Some madness.
Maybe we'll get her on the podcast. She can have a rant.
It'd be really good to talk to her, wouldn't it? She's a very interesting lady.
She's very funny. I was interviewing Michael Young for the first time when he first came to badminton.
Yeah.
And I'd seen her before and I was like, I'm quite nervous because English wasn't great back then. And I was really nervous. She's going to kill me for telling this story. So, do you remember when he was just winning everything on Sam? And
yeah.
And I've since heard that Michael Young's actually like, quite a laugh. But at the time, his English wasn't great. And I was pretty terrified because he was the best rider in the world. I mean, he's just won everything, hasn't he? Like the man poos gold.
I mean, he's incredible.
He's incredible. He's such a technician, like unbelievable. So clearly very nervous. And Horseware Island, I think, had organised it. And I'd seen Caroline before and I was like, oh, God, I've got I don't speak German. What do I say to the man? He's a god. Like, I was quite nervous. And I was in the field behind the warm-ups for badminton because we wanted somewhere quiet, away from everyone. So obviously everyone adoring fans and stuff. And I chatted to Caroline while I was waiting. And then she was like, OK, see you later, because Michael turned up. Started doing the interview. And as I'm interviewing him, the camera's kind of facing both of us. So I was in shot, he was in shot, and the microphone could be the camera. And as I'm interviewing him, Caroline walks behind him, slightly out of shot, of the camera and starts making rude gestures in my eye line. Camera couldn't see it. Michael couldn't see it, but I could certainly see it. And it was, yes, putting her tongue in her cheek and putting her hand up and down to her mouth type gestures.
But it doesn't even remotely surprise me.
No. So I'm there, absolutely shitting a brick that I've got to interview the number one rider in the world, eventer of all time, Olympic gold medalist, world champion, and there's Caroline Powell making blowjob faces at me behind him. I was like, you absolute shoot. It actually probably helped because I lightened up a bit, but oh my God. And I just love her. She makes me laugh. I think her winning badminton, absolute treat for me. I get on really well with her. So I'd love to get her on here so I could confront her about her rude gestures.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it was great. It was great that she won badminton. She,
I think it's nice to mix it up a bit as well. Like someone who wasn't probably on the kind of everyone's radar at the start of the competition. And I
no, not
great.
At all. Not at yeah. all. I mean, she was last of the finishers the year before, wasn't she, or something like that?
Yes, I know.
But on saying that, you know, that horse is pretty special, and it was showing some really, really good form in the run up to it. So,
good and honor. I would love absolutely to hear. Good some, honor. I'd love to get her to tell us some stories about Lenormand as well, because that horse was tiny, but
absolutely phenomenal.
Nuts. Like, yeah. She had to be led to the dressage and things like this. Like, the horse was absolutely bonkers. So, of all the horses going to the Olympics, show jumping or eventing or dressage, which would you most like to ride?
Goodness me, that's that is quite a question. God, all of our horses on our team are fabulous. I'd love to have a sit on Ben's horse, Ben Hobday's horse, that Chris Burton's been selected on.
Oh yeah, because Chris Burton's taking that to the Olympics.
Yeah,
no, do you know what, that'd be good. Get Chris on or Ben, because I mean, what a, I'm going to just swear, what a head fuck to have to make those kind of decisions for Ben to do the best for the horse, knowing he's not going to make the team with the horse to then have Chris ride it. I mean, that's a whole conversation that I want to have with him because I mean, just nuts, isn't it?
Yeah.
But, I mean, a shadow, like what an amazing horse. But yeah. Chris is...
he has done a fantastic job with it. Fantastic job with it.
I'd love to find out about the inner workings, but we might have to wait till after the Olympics because Chris's head will definitely be...
Yeah, he'll be in the game. He'll be in the game.
He'll be head in the game. Right. So, yeah, all of those going to Paris. Well done on your selections, team. Did you see on Instagram the Joe Stockdale piece about riding on the Olympics on the horse that Tim bought him? For anyone who's lived under a rock and doesn't know the story of Tim Stockdale, I rode Calico Bay with him once. What a legend. I mean, Tim was the nicest man in show jumping and very sadly passed away from cancer. And Joe has taken on the mantle at just 18, took over the yard and just absolutely nuts. And Joe's a legend. His wife, his mum, Laura, is a legend. Tim Stockdale, I mean... Show jumping can be a tad boring just to watch round after round. Me and him used to sit on the sidelines talking about cricket. He is very much missed and loved. But what a wonderful legacy, like Joe being selected and going to the Olympics.
It's the most incredible emotional story. Yeah, I bet.
On a horse that Tim found as a three-year-old, I think, and said, this would be the horse for you. And I think... not long before Tim died, Joe said to him that I'll take this horse to the Olympics and it's horse of a lifetime. Anyway, we should do a Olympic special, maybe.
Yes, I think we definitely should.
But yes, thank you to all those who have been listening so far. Tell us what you want to hear, guys. Get on contact. I've only got an Instagram page set up at the moment. Give me a chance. But there will be a website and everything, and shout out to our graphic designer Becca, who's made all our millions of graphics. She is amazing and she's very tolerant of us not replying, so thank you, Becca.
She's been very tolerant.
But yeah, let us know what you want to hear. We really want to bring new stuff from the equestrian world for you guys, and I don't mind if it's from amateur level all the way up to the best. Who do you want to hear from? What do you want to hear about? Or do you just want to hear about Simon cacking himself on the top of a mountain? We'll send him up more mountains.
Sorry, this podcast has definitely not been overly horsey.
No, but it's you we want to hear from, Simon. It's you.
Like
right.
That.
Thank you for listening. Please like, share, follow All About Bollocks, because that will keep us going and hopefully get us some sponsors so we can keep this podcast going. Simi, what have you got planned for the rest of the week? Or the weekend now?
So I'm show jumping tomorrow. I've got a load of horses going show jumping tomorrow. I was at Aston the Walls today and yesterday, and the open Wednesday. And then I'm show jumping next week as well, and we're going to Upton Horse Trials.
Oh, Upton. Excellent.
Upton, yeah, which is a really lovely event.
Do you like it if people come and say hi?
Absolutely.
Yeah? You've become a bit of an influencer. Totes.
No, I haven't. I haven't. But if anyone wants to come and say hi, please do. It's always nice to see people.
Just maybe not 2 seconds before you go cross-country.
To be honest, I don't really care. Whatever.
All right.
Well, you know.
He's a man of the people.
Yeah, exactly.
And if you're listening to this on audio and you don't know what Simon looks like, just look for a man with massive hair walking around with a whippet behind him.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. We'll just go.
It's very upright today. Anyway, I digress. Thank you for listening. And all that's left to say is, Simon, shut up and ride.